Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Today we continue a conversation we began on our last program with Frank Schaefer. Frank Schaefer is the son of Francis and Edith Schaefer, founders of the La Brie community in Switzerland in 1955. It was a hippie evangelical commune that many a young seeker passed through in subsequent years, and where our guest was raised according to what he calls the doctrine of fundamentalist Christianity. His father was an evangelical Christian theologian, philosopher, and Presbyterian pastor who passed away in 1984. On our previous program, Frank outlined his early years and how he began to move away from the system of belief that he grew up with and that his father was very famous in supporting, and he became his own man, and in that process began to see the evangelical or right-wing movement in a very different light, and it was fascinating what he had to tell us last time. Today we turn our attention to religious liberty. Let me ask you, Frank, how has the religious right movement helped or hindered religious liberty? I'm talking about today, both in this country and around the world. What's going on with that?
Well, the religious right movement in the United States has destroyed the concept of religious liberty, and they're continuing to do it for a very simple reason, and that is they have politicized it. It's no longer about religious liberty. It is about framing discussions about things like gay rights, lesbianism, the abortion issue, women's rights, and the rest of it in ways that if they aren't allowed to object to it and discriminate, they are now pitching that as persecution. We had a big example of that in the Boston area where I happen to live, in Gordon College. Gordon College began firing professors that objected to the fact that their new president had written to Barack Obama when Obama was president, asking him for an exemption on both federal and state laws prohibiting discrimination against gay people. The ability to fire a man or a woman because they are gay for no other reason other than you discover they are gay. Mm-hmm. They asked for an exemption and pitched it as religious liberty. And this is not religious liberty as we understand it, which is the ability to worship, to congregate, to meet, to believe as you would without interference from the state. Religious liberty, when it's turned into the ability to discriminate against people to whom you object outside of the framework of the law, that is what right-wing religious liberty is being pitched at today. And they then paint themselves as a minority set of victims that just happen to have a majority in Congress, a majority in the Senate, and a man in the White House doing their bidding, and a vice president who is a theocrat himself in Mike Pence. This is their idea of victimology. And so for them, they take these trivial subjects like the right not to take a wedding cake for a lesbian couple, whatever it may be. But in much bigger strokes, the right wing is now pitching religious liberty as their right to not obey anti-discrimination laws in the U.S. and other similar statutes, and to therefore be allowed to take their ideas of religion and morality and not only impose them on other people, but actually actively discriminate against other people. This is not religious liberty. And it has harmed the ideas of religious liberty around the globe as well. Because when you look, for instance, in China at what they are doing with their Muslim population, or you look at what's happened in Burma and what's happened to their Muslim population, or if you look at what's happening in other parts of the world, or the way the Saudis or the Israelis discriminate against people who fall outside the Islamic faith or the idea of a Jewish nation. The right wing across the globe, the conservative movements across the globe, look at Hinduism in India now with Modi becoming a Hindu nationalist and the levels of discrimination, telling Muslim people they're no longer citizens. This is all part of a parcel. It has nothing to do with religious liberty. It has to do with permission to discriminate in the name of religion. These are two different things. And when that is taken away from you by law, you are not being discriminated against any more than a white person was being discriminated against in the South when a school was integrated. Mm-hmm. That's not discrimination. That's integration. So it's that same flip-flop. It's that same reversal. It is the inability of people to make enough room for people that are different than them. And they want it legislated that they have the right to behave abominably towards people and exclude them. That's not liberty. So I think we're in a time right now where the very words religious liberty have been changed so profoundly in terms of their meaning that it's hard to use that language anymore and make a point.
We're talking with Frank Schaefer. He is an author and used to be a fundamentalist Christian, and he has sort of gone his own way. And I want to ask you this question, Frank. You have laid out a scenario here for us from your opinion and from your experience that we as Christians who want to be sincere Christians, who don't want to buy into the things you were talking about there, what can we do in this world to help the true religious liberty, as you outlined it, and the true love of God, as you have discovered it to be?
I wish I could lay it out as simply as saying, here are the three things you must do. But at risk of being facetious, I would say those who are trying to be Christians could try something very novel. Actually follow the teachings of Jesus for a while and see what happens. And what we do not find Jesus doing is discriminating against the untouchable. So the Samaritan is the hated person. The Samaritan is outside of the faith. The Samaritan is regarded worse than any evangelical ever looked at a lesbian lover of their daughter that they're so disappointed in. The Samaritan is the other. They're not only worshiping falsely on the wrong hill, they are the enemy people. And so Jesus goes and not only asks the Samaritan woman to draw him water, he sits down and talks to her and stays in that town for a couple of days, teaching the other, the unknown, the untouchable. When the woman touches him in a day and age when women and men were even more separated than they are today. And in a Jewish culture in which women could not be touched or even approach someone during a menstrual cycle, she touches him and her flow of blood stops. And instead of condemning her, he appreciates her faith and commends her in front of a bunch of guys who would have been horrified that someone who was at that time of the month protracted in her bleeding affliction would come close. So wherever you look at it, within the actual life and teaching of Jesus, whether you believe he's the Son of God or not is a moot point here. One thing cannot be argued, and that is that Jesus would interpret religious liberty as the right to discriminate against the other. Everything in his teaching and example points the other way, whether it's who he was with, his rebuke of those who told the prostitute not to wash his feet with her tears. Everything that pertains to our present situation points a picture, not at a kind of an open-ended intolerance of evil or anything else in any name, definitely an upholding of a tradition, he's a Jew, et cetera, et cetera. But he's someone who's reaching across all party lines. And the idea that we would circle the wagons in the name of Jesus and interpret religious liberty as the right to discriminate is just ludicrous. Now, I would say that even if I was part of a new atheist movement, nobody can read the teachings of Jesus and come away with the conclusion that it's exclusionary when it comes to cross-cultural things. But when it gets down to the issue of religious liberty, tolerance of the other or the right to discriminate against them in the name of your religion, we know exactly where Jesus would be. And it's not because we're extending anything or fishing around for something. It's because it's in the actual example of everyone he reached out to, from Roman tax collectors who were hated as part of the oppressors. So Jesus would be reaching out to gun-toting, open-carry, new right, religious, white nationalist fanatics that all good Christians hate. He would not exclude them, because then he would have excluded the hated tax collector working for the Roman Empire and the oppressor. And on the other hand, there's no possible way to read his intersection of his life with the women around him and think that he wouldn't be reaching out to today's version of the untouchables and the gay or the transgender or the bisexual community. So I don't think that there's any discussion about that. The only question is, you know, do the people who claim to be Christians actually want to follow the example of Jesus, or don't they? And I don't think that's glib. I think it's very basic.
So when you write a book with the title, you know, Why I Am an Atheist Who Believes in God, you are qualifying who or what that God is. Am I right in saying that?
I don't know if I would dare qualify who or what God is in any case, but what I am qualifying is the idea of certainty. I'm pushing 68 here, with the difference between me now and when I was 20, other than the whole political evolution I've taken, is that I actually believe that paradox, drives who we are. I think the difference between me now and then is that I am aware of the law of unintended consequences, and that goes for everything you think you believe and how it actually plays out. How do your kids grow up when they're trained a certain way? Well, when you live long enough to see how it all works, you take a different view than when you were, you know, green and out there bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, sure that you were right about everything. So whatever my vision of God is today, it's one that would fit totally well with saying either I'm not sure as an agnostic, or I really don't believe there is a God, and yet at the same time I pray. And how do you deal with that? Well, you don't. We're spiritual beings caught in this kind of web of evolution. Things fall apart. Things are moving apart. And on the other hand, we find spiritual meaning in our lives. How do you work all that together? Well, if you're humble and you've lived long enough, you admit you don't. What you do is you say, that is where faith comes in. That is where hope comes in. And when you lose faith, that doesn't mean you lose hope that there isn't such a thing as faith. And so I really do believe that the flip side of belief is unbelief, and it's always that. It's always a seesaw between the two. I would not try to define God, but I would define one thing in my own mind, and that is that there's no theological description that is adequate. Look, we're only 200 years into even understanding that our universe extends beyond our own galaxy. That's in
true.
The Milky Way.
That's true.
That should give us a little proportion on our knowledge about what's out there. And when it comes to theology and philosophy and all these other certainties, I would just say the starting rule for me now is the humility to say I don't know about a lot of things, but at the same time realize that faith and hope survive that not knowing. I don't know anything, but I would imagine, given my relationship with my own five grandchildren, none of whom I would burn in hell forever for anything they would do to me, including killing me if they did, that it's unimaginable to me that if, as a fallen human being with a short 68 years here on Earth, to experience the growth of love in my own heart for my grandchildren to that extent, that the creator of the universe who looks down upon us with love, otherwise where would love come from, is someone full with revenge to the point of eternal punishment. It isn't a question of rejecting that on the basis of some nice touchy-feely liberal theology. It's a question of rejecting that based on the common sense of who I have turned out to be and not imagining a creator who is less evolved than myself. That's unthinkable. And so on that basis, I think in the end, love triumphs.
Well, this has been a wonderful conversation today with Frank Schaefer. He is an interesting guy, and he had an interesting past, and he shared that with us over the last couple of programs. And I want to invite you, listener, to go to his website, www.frankschaefer.com. That's FrankSchaeffer. He's also on Facebook. Frank, thank you so much for sharing from your heart today. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for the shot, Charles.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Frank Schaefer, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258. Or email us through our website at libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.